You're listening to the Nightlife Podcast with Indira Naidu.
All right, everybody. It's that time of night. It's been a long day, but now you can kick back. The sun's gone down and the house is quiet. It's time to pour yourself a bath. That's right. Light some candles, slip out of those clothes and into the water, and let all your worries wash away. Tonight, we're going on a bathing odyssey, but the kind of bathing we don't really do that much here in Australia. We're talking about bathing together. From Japanese onsen to Turkish hammams and Scandinavian saunas, all over the world, there are cultures with strong traditions of getting together, getting their kits off, and washing away their troubles. So why aren't we into it? Well, one person who has been no stranger to a long soak is filmmaker and self-described bathing enthusiast Mary Meenis. Hi, Mary. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hi, Indira. How are you?
Very well. Now, also with us is Freya Berwick. Together, Freya and Mary are working together, actually, to promote the idea of communal bathing here in Australia. They're currently putting the final touches on a new bathhouse in Melbourne that should be finished early next year. Thanks for joining us, Freya.
Hi, how are you going?
Very well. Mary, if I can go to you first. I mentioned that there aren't many Australians that are really into communal bathing. It's not really something that we do. We may do it when we're overseas, but not here. Why is it that we're not into it? Are we just prudes?
Maybe. I think it might have more to do with the fact that we're an island and that we have a really huge beach culture. And the fact that we didn't have our kind of, you know, built kind of origins weren't ones that had necessity for a bathhouse, like perhaps in Roman times or even in places like Morocco.
Right. So we have plenty of water around us. So that's part of the reason we don't have this culture.
I think it might be. Yeah. But I think there is a certain kind of maybe not prudishness, but yeah, sensitivity to nudity. Maybe that comes from our colonial roots, perhaps. Mm.
Or our harsh sun.
Or our harsh sun, exactly.
So Mary, totally. Where did your enthusiasm for bathing start?
Well, it all started for me when I went and visited the hammam at the Mosque of Paris, and a really good friend of mine, Nella, who had she'd actually come over here to study and did an exchange, and then I went back and visited her over in Paris, and she's French Tunisian, so she would frequent the baths with her mother, and she said, Mary, we have to go, you know, I really want to take you through this whole ritual. And I kind of expected to spend a couple of hours there, but we ended up spending 6 hours there that first time. Mm. And it was just the most incredible space. I just instantly felt, I guess, whilst it was like really kind of anxiety inducing in some ways because it was nude bathing, it was also super liberating. And it was the first time that I started to regard my body in a way that was kind of, I don't know, of all, you know, itself, and then being, you know, the same as everybody else. And it was in seeing that kind of diversity in the bathhouse of bodies, you know, different ages, different shapes, sizes, backgrounds. It was really amazing.
And I guess that also that idea of separating the body's sexuality from the body's nakedness.
Yeah, absolutely. I just loved that it was kind of more of a neutral space. It was a space where you could regard yourself in a way that was completely separate from anything sexual, and where you could, get to know yourself a bit more.
And Frey, can I come to you now? What about you? Where did your interest in bathing come from?
Oh, that's a hard one. I would say I have a deep interest in water, and that I grew up in far north Queensland, did a lot of swimming, you know, would swim every single day. But I was introduced to a bathing culture of sorts when I spent 3 years in Norway, which is not at all the sort of origin of sauna bathing in the Nordic countries, but it's definitely a thing there. And I remember in the local communities, you know, you'd just go to the public pool and you would bathe, or in the hotel where I worked at, there was a sauna and you would jump in the sauna, then you'd jump in the fjord, back in the sauna, fjord, and it was just a really beautiful ritual. Mm.
Yeah, sounds good. I've got a text from Jim who says, communal bathing in a pandemic? I don't think so. I was going to ask you both, I mean, is this really going to be the best time to start a new bathing house in Melbourne? Mary?
We definitely questioned it. Public pools are reopening. It's just the same as a public pool, probably even better because of the standards of cleanliness in the space and all of the amazing technologies that you can use now. And I think, you know, if we were disconnected before the pandemic, it's even worse now, definitely. So we need to find ways to come back together. And this is just one of those ways that can kind of become like a third space, I guess, for people to reconnect.
Freya, what are your thoughts about the effects a pandemic is going to have on the idea of groups getting together like this?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. There's obviously some hesitation, but at the same time, with all of the isolation that we've experienced, especially here in Melbourne, there is like a really strong urge to be together and with caution, and our space allows that. You know, a bathhouse is a space to be clean and is a very clean space itself. And as Mary said, you know, the public pools are open, and that's because they're very well sanitized. And so I think it's a really good opportunity actually to connect with your community in a way that is safe.
Well, Mary, let's talk a little bit about the tradition behind public bathing and bathing together, particularly in the Western world. Where did it start? I mean, we know the Romans enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, sure. The Romans did enjoy it a lot. So, I mean, the earliest origins, I think, that historians talk about might not be in the Western world per se, but it would have been in the Indus Valley, probably. There was a great bath that was found there that was uncovered, and it would be in modern-day Pakistan now. But then that same kind of system of bathing from the furnace, which would heat walls and the floors and any water, body of water, sort of came through, I guess, the Greek, the areas in Greece, and then up through Rome. And then the Romans really proliferated the whole idea through different countries that they conquered, obviously. They would have different kind of military towns and then bathing towns.
Now, why did the Romans love bathing so much?
Well, I think it was a place to commune, to convene, to share ideas. You know, it serves so many purposes, like from hygiene right through to gossip, to maybe cutting deals. I mean, Seneca wrote about it a lot. The sounds and the smells and the things that would go on in bathhouses. I think it's just a moment for repose as well. So from the busyness of life.
And have any of those Roman bathhouses survived to this day?
Well, not really. I think the closest might have been the bathhouse, well, the baths in Bath,
yes,
in the UK. So that's a really famous example. I don't know if you've been there, Indira, but they have the old spring that you can still see there in all of its glory. It's really amazing. And then they have the modern baths that they've adapted to be kind of a modern take on what was probably a Roman circuit.
Right. Have you experienced a bath there?
Yeah, I have. They were able to take me through when I went on my big odyssey of, you know,
bathing.
5 months of bathing. Yeah, exactly. I learned don't get a scrub 3 days in a row.
No.
That's a hot tip for anyone out there. But yeah, it was amazing to visit them there, and they've really kind of adapted and integrated new things like Watsu, which is like this weightless water bathing where you get led through the water by somebody and massaged in the water, and it kind of feels like you're in the womb. So
wow.
Yeah, so there's some pretty amazing things that people are doing. But there's always, there's also the beautiful ruins in Rome, of course, of the baths of Diocletian and Caracalla, which they're an amazing example in terms of the footprint of a Roman bath.
Wow. Sean in Fitzroy North has mentioned the Irish tradition of seaweed bathing, and that's definitely one to experience, he recommends. Have either of you experienced that?
I haven't.
Seaweed bathing. No?
Sorry, I'm getting, I can't hear very well, but were you asking about seaweed bathing?
Yes, it's an Irish tradition apparently.
No, I have not experienced that.
Yeah, there you go. And we've got another text here about a hilarious time that this caller had at a Japanese onsen. Everything was in Japanese and... yeah, she enjoyed it, but she found that she ended up in the men's area instead of the female's area because she couldn't read the Japanese signs.
Oh, my goodness. Even when you can read the signs, I mean, a friend of mine tells this funny story about being at the Japanese bathhouse in Collingwood and how somehow she ended up not getting the information correct and ended up with no pants on in the sort of common area. So yeah, all sorts of things can go wrong in a bathhouse in terms of etiquette.
And there are so many different ways of bathing together. One of my favourite experiences was a hammam that I had in Morocco. And it wasn't so much a group bathing experience. It was just with my husband. But again, it was on these slabs of stone that we were, you know, very harshly rubbed and scrubbed and then hosed down, and then we had massages in a communal area of massaging. Mm. Loved that experience. It was all underground, the candlelight and rose petals floating in ponds of, pools of water. It was really beautiful. Mm. Tell me a little bit, Mary, about all the different cultures around bathing and why some cultures are into it and other cultures aren't so much.
Well, there's so many. So you've just talked about the Moroccans who do hammam bathing. Mm. So that's come from the Greek kind of style and Roman style, and then it came through North Africa and then up through the Moorish civilizations brought it up through Spain as well. And then also Turkey had that same kind of style of bathing. I guess why these particular places have it might be linked to religion as well. It definitely is. It's, you know, they're performing ablutions. So it's a certain form of not just hygiene but cleansing in the case of people who are Islamic. And that carries through. And there's always lots of hammams which are located near mosques, for instance, and why, of course, I went to the hammam at the Paris mosque. And then there's also Russian banya, which is really vital and very very resilient style of bathing, I would say. There's Japanese onsen, which is relating to the hot springs, and then the bathhouse in the cities are called sentos. And then as well, there's all of the thalassotherapy in Greece, which is thalasso relating to the sea, balneotherapy, sauna, as we already said, and then therme or term, as the Italians call it. So that's more, again, speaking to the springs. So there's a bit of a delineation, I guess, between spring water and water which is then just treated with minerals.
So many cultures have connections to bathing. And Freya, then of course you have the Scandinavian tradition, and this involves saunas.
Yeah, sauna is actually a Finnish word. It's the most widely used Finnish word. And again, it has its roots in cleanliness. You know, it's a family ritual that was done at the end of the week, usually on a Saturday before church. And, you know, as with many of these other cultures, it's just turned into a tradition.
And are you a regular? I mean, is that something that you do communally?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not quite the same as what it was in Norway, I have to admit, where I could sauna beside a fjord and then jump in and then jump back into the sauna, hence part the reason why we're building Sense of Self. But here in Australia, I mean, we do have saunas in the public pools and places like that where you can do your best to recreate that ritual of hot cold bathing for sure.
And so what are we missing out in Australia by not, you know, taking part in these communal, particularly the sauna experience?
I think we miss an opportunity where we are all just humans together, and there's no stratum, there's no social stratum, and you sort of have this feeling of perspective when you're sitting in a sauna or a bath with just all of these other bodies in your community, and there's no judgment and there's no performance or beauty lens to it. I think that's kind of what we're missing.
Now, one of the forms of bathing that Mary mentioned, thermae, is something that our next guest has experienced and investigated. Steve Lambert has spent years on the road sampling thermal waters and is the author of a guidebook called Australia's Great Thermal Way. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Not a problem, Andrea. Yes.
Steve,
nice to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. We've been talking about how Australians don't really do the public bathing thing like some other cultures around the world, and some might think that that's because we don't have the geothermal waters that some places in Europe and Japan have, but that's not really true, is it, Steve?
No, that's a misconception because it's been happening for hundreds of years in Australia, mainly from, as we were speaking about before, about the Europeans. As they came over to Australia, they followed their cultural bathing and they found the locations up in Moree in the areas around there. So that was one of their places where they continued that lifelong journey.
So how many of these hot springs would we have around Australia, Steve?
I've just rewritten edition number 5 and I've now located 67 throughout
67.
Australia. 67? 67, yes, and they're all, every state and territory has them.
Right.
And they're all differing in the requirements of the mineral content because it depends where the waters come from.
Yes, well, I was going to ask you, what is the source of these thermal waters? How have they been created?
The major one is the Great Artesian Basin, which covers the area from far north Queensland, New South Wales, and down in South Australia. Great Artesian Basin that was formed millions of years ago when the Great Dividing Range was pushed up on the east coast. So the inland sea itself was tipped on its side and is pushed up into the West MacDonald Ranges and also into the Great Dividing Range. And what happened, that was where the water entered into the basin. So it's not a free-flowing basin. It's more of a slate, rocky foundation, and the water only moves a metre per year as it soaks through the rocks.
And have you been to all of these 67 thermal springs?
Yes. I started this a long time ago in 2008.
And do you have a favourite?
Yes, I've got several favourites. One of my favourites is in the Northern Territory in Bitter Springs. It's only about 28 degrees, but it's the Roper River that runs with thermal water.
Right. And is that a sort of an official organised site, or is it just a river that anyone can just jump in and jump out of?
No, you can just go there. You go up to Mataranka. There's accommodation in Mataranka. There's two thermal pools there. There's a Mataranka homestead, which has got a caravan park. Or Bitter Springs, adjacent, about a kilometre away, there's another caravan park. You just go down there with your noodle and your bathers, and you jump in at that one end, and it's just a Pannus Palm line river that just flows with 28 degrees water, crystal clear. You can see the fish, the turtles. You can either swim out and park on a bit of a rock or a log so you don't float down. Or you can just float down and have a relaxing float down to the end, then you pop out and walk back up and do it all over again.
Wow, it sounds wonderful. What's it like, Steve?
Oh, it's very very relaxing. Because you're up in the Northern Territory, it's quite warm and humid, and to jump into a nice 28-degree thermal river that's running along and covered in palms and, yeah, as you said, there's the bird life, there's the turtles, the fish. You can just relax. It's a very relaxing part of the day to just sit there.
Now, you know, we know that a lot of people can be a bit protective over their special places and they don't like the tourist hordes invading. Yeah. How did you find out about these thermal springs?
Well, that was one of my biggest problems, was to locate them all. So in 2008, I've been on the road for many years. I was up at Far North Queensland at Atherton, and it was quite cold. So I rode the motorbike around the area to have a good look, and I found Innert Hot Springs, which is due west of Atherton, maybe an hour. And all of a sudden, it's in the hinterland, and there's several pools there. There's Nettle Creek that runs next to it. You can dig a hole there and jump into the water. And I thought, why am I sitting in Atherton when I can go to Innert? So I moved the caravan there, and I lived there for 3 months. And by living there and into all the different, there's four different temperature pools, the hot and cold pools as well. You can get from a 37 down to a 27, so you can have a cool dip. I just found the 3 months of living there, I completely came out revigorated. I felt detoxed, and I felt I was 21 years again. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah, well, that's high praise indeed. Are there many Australians that know about these thermal springs? I mean, how many people do you come across when you visit them?
Well, when I put the book together, because I spent 2 years trying to find these hidden thermal pools, because everyone knew of some, but there's no one that correlated and put them all together. It was mainly, he was kept a secret into the shires or into the townships, etc. But since I put it all together, the first edition, I only had 40 pools in there. And what I've found since then, by talking and listening to people in the pool, socialisation in the pools, that's where I picked up a word. There's one here, there's one there. But as an example, Moree Gwaita Caravan Park, and Moree's got another four more thermal pools there. They have at least 350,000 people a year travel through that area in the middle of winter heading north, and they experience the thermal pools on their journey. So they either go to other areas with thermal pools like Blackall and Mitchell, or they just go to the Gulf on holiday and then they come back and pick up the thermal pools on the way back. So there's a lot of people on the road.
Well, of course, we're coming up to, hopefully, if the pandemic allows us, a bit of a holiday break for many of us, and we'll be hitting the roads and doing a little bit of exploring around Australia. What are some of your favourite, what would be your top five thermal springs that you recommend people visit, Steve?
Well, my favourites, if you're heading up, just heading north up through New South Wales, is the Gwaitakara Park, because you've got a choice of five different pools there.
Right.
So if you're a beginner, not used to swimming in thermal water, their pool starts at 34 degrees Celsius, so you haven't get overly hot, because you've got to maintain, if you're getting hot, you've got to sit on the edge for 20 minutes, have a bit of a rest, have plenty of water, so you don't dehydrate.
Right.
So that's the ideal situation. You get from 34 to a 35 degree pool, then the 37, they got a 39 degree. And then also there's a 28 degree large swimming pool to do laps, etc. So to me, that's an area where you can start off and then you can just feel the difference, what a couple of degrees makes to your body and how you can tolerate those particular high temperatures, or you're more comfortable with a lower one.
Terrific. Steve, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your wonderful investigations and adventures into thermal springs. And your book is called Australia's Great Thermal Way. And Mary and Freya, when do you think your bathhouse will be up and running next year?
Well, we're estimating mid to late Jan at this point. So we expect to finish it before Christmas. But then to open it, because everyone's going to go away later, a little bit later.
And you'll be offering what, sauna experiences as well as bathing? What sort of experiences?
So we have a pool, which is going to be a mineral pool, and it could it's quite large and fit about 15 people. So it's probably the largest one that's in Metro Melbourne. And then we'll also have a sauna. which is replicating the Finnish style of sauna. And eventually we'll also have a hammam. So we held off on doing that just to wait until winter.
My favorite hammams.
Yes, they're amazing, aren't they? Yeah, so we will have the whole experience. So you'll be able to get scrubbed down. You'll be able to use things like henna, the henna that doesn't stain you, sorry, but the one that nourishes the hair. And, you know, have your hair washed. You'll be able to, have that whole experience.
Brilliant.
Or you can also DIY it and use some of the products that we have there to do it yourself.
Okay, sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on Nightlife and sharing your passion for bathing with us. Mary Minas, filmmaker and bathing enthusiast, and Freya Berwick, and they're putting together this Sense of Self bathhouse under construction in Melbourne. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Indira.
Thank you. See ya.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.